From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Elodie Reed, filling in for Mitch Wortlieb. It's Tuesday, November 26th, and here are today's headlines. With colder weather approaching, the rules governing Vermont's motel voucher program for people experiencing homelessness are about to shift. On December 1st, the caps that have pushed over 1,500 people out of the motel voucher program this fall will be lifted for the winter. In recent years, the program's rules have been loosened during the coldest months, giving anyone seeking shelter potential access to a motel room. This winter, the rules will be tighter. Legislation passed this spring restricted winter access to motel vouchers to people over the age of 65, families with children, and people with disabilities. Seasonal shelter expansions are in the works, but may not meet the remaining need. Planned Parenthood clinics in Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine say they're seeing an uptick in traffic in recent weeks. President-elect Donald Trump has sent mixed messaging around abortion access, but has shared clear policy plans for limiting gender-affirming care. And Planned Parenthood of Northern New England says since Trump's re-election, more patients are now asking about contraception and gender-affirming care. Jessica Barquist is their spokesperson. In Vermont, she says appointments for IUDs and birth control implants have more than doubled since the election.
Pre-election, we were at an average of 51 per week, and now we're seeing about 105 calls per week.
Barquist says Planned Parenthood services are still available now and that they're strategizing how to maintain care access during the second Trump administration. Vermont's unemployment rate rose slightly last month, but it remains well below the national average. Vermont's rate of 2.3% in October was 0.1% higher than in the prior month. Vermont has the lowest unemployment rate in New England. The national rate is 4.1%. The Burlington-South Burlington area had the lowest unemployment in the state, while Derby had the highest at 2.6%. And for Vermonters whose work was impacted during flooding in late July, they have just under 1 week to file for disaster unemployment benefits from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Individuals living, working, or scheduled to work in Caledonia, Essex, and Orleans counties between July 29th through the 31st may be eligible for disaster unemployment assistance. Workers must first file for regular unemployment benefits before applying for additional disaster-related benefits. All claims must be filed by Monday, December 2nd. More information is available at labor.vermont.gov. The Addison County town of Moncton has a new town forest as of yesterday. The community purchased a 450-acre property from the Bristol-based lumber and forestry business A. Johnson Company. The property will remain open to the public forever and will never be developed. That's due to a conservation easement with the Vermont Land Trust. Bob Heiser is with the Land Trust. He says the property includes easy-to-access ponds and beaver wetlands, but it also has areas that are rugged and wild that provide good wildlife habitat.
And that includes miles of headwater streams and numerous vernal pools and some forest types that are uncommon in Vermont. The collection of those features really made it attractive to the town as a potential town forest.
The property straddles the Bristol town line and abuts a much larger piece of conserved land that's also open to the public. And Middlebury College field hockey players and fans are celebrating the team's seventh consecutive Division III NCAA championship. The Panthers beat the Tufts University Jumbo Sunday 2-1. The Panthers end this year's field hockey season with 19 wins and just 2 losses. This is the team's 9th NCAA championship. Coming up, what families don't discuss over dinner. That's after this.
The Frequency is sponsored by the Autosaver Group's year-end sales event going on now at all 15 dealerships in Vermont and Western New Hampshire. Savings on their entire lineup, from trucks, SUVs, and EVs to fuel-efficient cars and family-friendly models. Inventory from all stores at autosavergroup.com. And Gills Point S Tire and Auto Service, offering tire and brake service, oil changes, and state inspections. Online at gillspointstire.com.
As Thanksgiving approaches this week, some families will gather to share and reminisce, and others will pointedly not talk about the most sensitive topics. Today, we have an excerpt from NEPM's podcast, The Secrets We Keep. Reporter Karen Brown looks at one kind of family secret that's led to more than a few awkward conversations over the dinner table.
When Lisa was growing up in Amherst, Massachusetts in the 1960s and 70s, her parents really didn't understand her temperament.
They were very outgoing people, but there was tension because I was not.
They encouraged her to play outside after school with the neighborhood kids. Lisa preferred to stay home and read.
And that became a refrain as I got older. When I did things that were unfamiliar to them, they would say, "What's wrong with you?"
But it would be decades before Lisa discovered the secret that helped explain why she was so different from her parents. By then, it was 2016. She was married, living in Western Mass, and working as a grant writer for Amherst College.
My husband and I were big fans of the Henry Louis Gates show, Finding Your Roots.
You ever heard this story?
No, no.
And we started watching it, and we got really addicted to it. And, you know, he's constantly finding, like, ethnic heritage that people didn't know they had.
Lisa and her husband decided to buy genetic testing kits and send in saliva samples.
And I get my results back, and they're kind of what I expected. My dad was German on both sides. My mom's English on both sides. But I had all this Irish in there. And I was like,
On the website, there was a box asking if she wanted to see her DNA relatives. She clicked yes.
You know, it spins and spins and spins. There's a little, like, I'm working kind of spinning thing on your screen. And then the results came up. And the first result was half-brother. And then there's one that says half-sister. And then there's one that says half-brother.
And they even had the same facial structure as Lisa.
I couldn't breathe for a second. It was just this kind of shock. And it seemed really surreal.
Once she caught her breath, she called her mom. Her dad had already died. She asked straight out, "Did you use a donor to have me?"
There was this long silence, and she said, "I promised I'd never talk about this."
It's for her mother's privacy that Lisa asked us not to use her last name. Turns out, back in the early 60s, Lisa's parents tried for a baby without success, so they went to a fertility clinic in the Philadelphia area to pursue artificial insemination, the Ferris Institute, one of the country's first. Her parents agreed to keep it a secret.
The clinics would kind of enable this secret keeping by saying to the parents, they would say, "Well, you know, we'll mix it the donor sperm and yours together, and you'll never know."
Of course, that was decades before anyone imagined the genetic technology to come. Once Lisa got her DNA results, she joined a Facebook group created by some of her half-siblings and started to meet them.
I'm Dee Gish. I live in Sharon, Vermont.
Dee grew up in Pennsylvania, where she recalls a basically happy childhood. But, like Lisa, she felt different from the rest of her family. For one, they all had dark features. She had blonde hair and blue eyes.
There were, you know, neighborhood jokes about me being the mailman's daughter and things like that, which I didn't realize at the time how true that could have been.
Her father died when she was in college. That's when her mother sat Dee and her sister down. She said she and their father had spent 12 years trying to conceive until they decided to go to a sperm bank in Philadelphia, the Ferris Institute.
And it was a sense of relief and a sense of, that makes so much sense, and now I get it.
In the past decade or so, consumer genetic testing companies like 23andMe or Ancestry.com have made it easy and cheap to find out our origins. Since then, family skeletons have been busting out of the proverbial closet, often bifurcating lives between before and after. Danny Shapiro is a writer and podcaster in Northern Connecticut who focuses on how those secrets affect relationships, identities, and well-being, including her own. She wrote about this in her memoir, Inheritance.
When there is a massive secret being kept, there's some level at which you know it. And like cellularly. And so there was always this feeling that I had of something not adding up.
But it was only decades after both her parents died that she got her DNA tested. And after years writing about her European Jewish background, she learned her genetic profile did not match her parents' heritage. By going through family and medical records, she figured out her parents conceived her with a sperm donor at the same clinic in Philadelphia where Lisa and Dee were conceived.
Like literally, it felt like the room tilted, the floor tilted. And to find out that the stories that I had been told and the stories that I had told myself, which is what we base our identities on, was simply not true.
But after the initial shock, Dani made a conscious decision not to blame her parents. She understood that people make choices according to the norms of their era. Psychologists call this retrospective moral judgment.
I had to really think about what it meant to retrospectively, morally judge my parents for being people of their time. No one told their children. Everyone in the medical establishment told parents of my parents' generation, it's better for the child not to know.
In other words, they truly believed that what you don't know can't hurt you. Better to sweep things under the rug. And yet,
we do know now there is no rug, you know, and there is no broom. And secrets do seep into everything around them. And they do harm us even when we haven't, not even when we haven't, but especially when we haven't discovered them.
Lisa, the grant writer from Amherst, is conflicted about when she should have been told about her sperm donor. If she learned as a teenager, maybe it would have fueled the alienation she already felt. Yet she also believes, had her parents been honest with her, parts of her childhood could have been so much easier.
It would have normalized it. You know what I mean? Like, we would have had conflict over, like, how much time I was spending reading books versus hanging out with the kids in the neighborhood. But I wouldn't have felt like there was something wrong with me. It's so important for kids to know this so that they know that they're not broken when they're different.
But both Lisa and Dee say the revelation of their big family secret led to a truly positive change in their lives, this unconventional extended family.
Like, I would be standing in the supermarket checkout line and I'd look around and I'd be like, I don't even know how many half-siblings, you know? I have these cool people that I've just met and I have people I haven't met whose names I know and I have people I don't even know about. And I feel really different.
I've always been envious of people with big families and, you know, loud Christmas dinners and, you know, Thanksgiving get-togethers and things like that. I've always been envious of that. And now I kind of had the opportunity to maybe do that.
These days, people may be less likely to hide fertility or adoption stories. Society has, to some degree, lessened the shame and stigma around them, at least in places like Western Mass. But as Dani Shapiro says, there are still plenty of private topics that families are not yet willing to talk about at the holiday table.
I think shame also and secrecy also kind of tumble down through generations in a family. I mean, somebody at some point has to be the one who breaks that cycle, otherwise it keeps happening.
Which is exactly what Dani and Lisa and Dee are hoping to do. Break the cycle by breaking open their family secret so future generations will have the truth. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Karen Brown.
That was an excerpt from NEPM's podcast, The Secrets We Keep. Original music by Katie Samro. If you want to hear more, you can find all 5 episodes at nepm.org or wherever you get your podcasts. This story was brought to us through the New England News Collaborative. Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Carly Berlin, Mark Davis, Jen Jarecki, Abigail Giles, and me. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Elodie Reed. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
How are we supposed to fix what we don't talk about? Welcome to Homegoings, a Vermont Public podcast that encourages fearless conversations about art and race.
It's like an extended family, and especially around homegoing time.
Join us for Homegoings, wherever you get your podcasts. We're a proud member of the NPR Network.